Okay, my name is Liam Kett. I'm 68 years of age. I've been a radio fanatic since I was old enough to listen to radio. My first radio listening would be with my uncle tuning up and down the shortwave dial, listening to American stations, and got the bug that way. Eventually got involved in studying electronics, building transmitters, building radio receivers, built a crystal set from when I was about 14. Eventually went on to join some of my friends and setting up a radio station called Radio Kildare in Naas in County Kildare. And then I went on to KLB Community Radio in Newbridge, where I'm from. And we're relatively successful. Had some full-time employees and about 20 volunteers. And we worked very hard at establishing the station in advance of the licensing in 1986. The station was on AM and FM. The Radio Kildare station was AM only, wasn't it, Anthony?
AM only.
But it was a small transmitter, but covered the town of Naas and a bit further beyond. Got a huge local reaction in both local press and with local people. So it showed the necessity and the desire for people to have a local radio station. And they could finally get through and get their kind of music played, the kind of music they wanted to hear, played on their local radio station, and get local notices about jobs and about local news events.
Yeah.
And it brought it home to them. I think the government eventually got the message through the establishment of about 50 stations all around the country that there was an appetite for local radio. So eventually the penny dropped.
Yeah. What years was Radio Kildare active from?
Kildare 78
to 1981.
Yeah. Okay.
Essentially,
yeah.
They were the good years.
Then yeah. KLB was 85, 86 to the end of 87.
Okay, perfect. Brilliant. So, would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sorry. My name is Anthony McAllister. I'm 64 and I've known Liam for many, many years. Another companion of ours, John McKeown. The three of us began Radio Kildare in earnest in 1978. And we went to a friend's house, James Howlett, who has his own radio station in Galway and still is on the air. But we started in his home initially, and we had something like 400 phone calls in the first day of transmission. We used to do it the weekends and Saturdays and Sundays. And that went very well for about 3 years. At that stage, we all had our careers to think about, and we couldn't give it and devote the time that we would have liked to. And there was no sign at that stage of any licenses coming in the pipeline at that stage. So we, as I say, we had to lead our own lives and do our own things. But some really good highlights out of that were we championed a lot of causes, and one in particular springs to mind. There was the notorious nuclear power station that was proposed to be built in Rosslare, and we championed the anti-nuclear concert that was held in Newbridge at the time, and we were lucky enough to secure interviews with Christy Moore, Donal Lunny and Andy Irvine, who were playing on the night, and they were very enthusiastic about this thing not happening. And we play that recording to death, and it was picked up by other stations and indeed by RTE themselves, who were, I suppose, they were sidetracked in that they didn't realise that a local station could actually beat them to the issue and actually champion it before they did. And as it turned out, that power station never happened, and we have safer waters in the sea since then. I'd like to think that Radio Kildare was champion that cause.
Fantastic. Yeah, brilliant. So can you tell us a little bit about the equipment that you used? Was it AM frequency, FM shortwave?
We were on the 270 meters medium wave. It was an AM station only. We didn't have the funding to go bigger. Would have liked to have, obviously, but we were restricted in our budget, and as I say, we were just amateurs, but dedicated amateurs.
Yeah, definitely.
We were very lucky to have a good sponsor in the end, Sean English, who went for the Green Party afterwards. He had a public house, and he allowed us to use the back part of that where he kept his kegs, and that was essentially our studio. And we were able to avail of his 100-foot-high BBC aerial, and we had our copper coaxial wire on through that, and we had attached that to some of the adjoining properties without permission, but eventually that ironed itself out. But
and our second transmitter came from Enda Bracken in Naas,
yes,
who built the transmitter for Radio Free Derry, so it was a bit more powerful transmitter. Yeah, yeah. And of course, we had a plethora of aerials scattered all around County Kildare because you had to be on the move every weekend, you know. So we broadcast Saturdays and Sundays, but we could be in a creche in Kinnay to a cow shed in Lewistown to a bedroom in Naas, to a bottle store in a pub in Naas.
Wow.
It's my own home, I'm surprised.
So there were, you know, we had about 10 different locations around the county where we kept on the move to avoid having our equipment taken away. So
and you avoided any?
We did. Well, one of our guys, Johnny, was working in the post office.
He
at
was
the time.
Actually part of Telecom Ireland.
And of course they were the people who were trying to put us off air. Department of Communications.
Of
and,
course.
You can tell that now because he's retired.
Yeah. Well, one of his colleagues in the post office was a fairly higher up gentleman.
Yeah.
Shall remain nameless, but he was able to convey to us that there was a warrant down that a certain weekend there was going to be a detection van and a Garda car searching around Naas to try and find the location of the transmission. But we knew the date it was happening, so we stood inside the window of the pub with the pints in hands, watching the van and the squad car going up and down Naas frantically searching for a signal which wasn't there.
And you just
and after about 2 hours they gave up and decided to drive back to Dublin. As soon as we saw them driving back up the Dublin Road, we switched on and just had a normal Sunday. You know? Now, one of the beauties of the radio was we had a number of people who went on to national prominence through radio. I mean, Ray Darcy was involved in the pirate days with us. Ronan Collins used to come down on a Sunday afternoon to do a show in Naas. Pat O'Mahony, who did Head to Toe on RTE, also spent time. Quite a few of guys like from BLB in Bray and from the various stations around. You know, there was that's where people learnt the radio trade.
Yeah,
a lot of the older guys in the business would have spent time in pirate stations.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Prior to that, I and Liam as well, we were in Radio Dublin in Inchicore for some time as well, and I do remember that was on a Sunday afternoon. And you think about it now, like I can remember getting cassette tapes at the time, and the Boomtown Rats were always listening in, so they sent us in recordings that they'd made, and I remember promoting Mary of the Fort for them as saying, guys, this looks like this could be a fantastic single, and the following week it was released as a single. I'd like to think that I was instrumental in telling them this is how it's done.
Yeah.
And I think another band called U2 occasionally listened in and out to us, and always sent us good wishes and were, you know, were there, because as Liam pointed out, RT at the time was very, very lax in what it was doing. I mean, it was just news documentaries and traditional Irish music, no pop station, no pop music at all, and nothing for young people. There was no mobile phones, no internet, no nothing. So I mean, the young people of Ireland were voting with their feet, voting with their ears, in fact, listening to pirate radio stations. And eventually, as Liam said, the penny dropped and they had to come on board. And
but they were straining their ears trying to listen to Radio Luxembourg at 2 a.m. medium wave at night, and trying to tune in Radio Caroline, Radio London, whatever, you know. And
I grew up listening to Radio Caroline because you couldn't listen to RTE.
Yeah.
It would be a great day every time Radio Caroline would steam into Dublin Bay, because you'd be guaranteed good music for maybe 24 hours.
With the KLB experience, and I can speak from just from personal experience, that the country music bands of Ireland, a lot of them weren't getting radio play on the national station.
Yeah.
And a lot of them owe their popularity today to the fact that they aired all their early songs on local radio around the country on the pirate stations. And they, you know, they'll admit that, say today, yes, thanks to local radio for helping them to establish a business, which they did.
Yeah.
You know? But they were being ignored by the national broadcaster for so many years.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell me who was the founders of both Kildare and Radio Dublin?
Well, Radio Dublin was already up and running, and that had been on the air for since the mid-60s. Jim Howlett, who was a DJ there, told them about us, and they offered us slots there. So that's how we got into Radio Dublin. But we felt the need in our own area to stop the commuting up and down.
Of course, we
could do something on our own bat, and we obtained a transmitter, and away we went. But we had a foundation done in Dublin as to how.
So both of you together set up.
Well, more Anthony and Johnny than me. I just dragged you in.
Oh, we brought in Liam for experience as well.
Brilliant.
He's a great technical know-how. So.
And what in terms of getting hold of the equipment, what was the challenge like there?
Well, it's like everything else. You hear about equipment, you hear about somebody having something that is of interest, and you go and see them, and you do a barter, and you get to know them, and they get to know you, and then there's a bit of trust built up, and away you go.
Cool.
KLB was set up by Peter O'Neill and Declan Dillon.
Yeah.
They were the two main people behind KLB Community Radio. And I was on the committee as well, but they were the guys who put the money into the station and bought the original transmitter and helped to set it up. And, you know, they were very committed to radio.
Yeah.
And we had a premises in Newbridge, which we were paying a rent on, and we had a receptionist, and we had a sales rep on the road selling advertising.
Yeah.
And we were registered with the revenue commissioners for income tax and VAT, so we were trying to keep our noses clean in advance of the license application, which we had eventually intended to put in.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And in terms of the music that you played, was you were playing country music, you were playing pop music?
I wasn't playing country in those days.
No,
I was very much into rock music in those days. And in fact, I was instrumental in bringing Fiddle In It to Newbridge Town Hall with Brush Shields.
Yeah.
And one night in 1970, I actually have a copy of a letter of confirmation signed by Phil for a gig in the town hall with Orphanage now, before they became Tin Lizzy.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gary Moore on stage with Phil Lynott in Newbridge Town Hall in 1970. And the price we paid for the band, £45. Yeah. So I was into the rock music. I brought a band called Granny's Intentions, who were huge. They got a contract with Marquee Promotions in London. They were one of the first Irish bands to break into the English charts. They had a song called Never an Everyday Thing. I brought bands like Deep Joy, who were the remnants of Van Morrison's band, Them.
Them
to Newbridge. We had the Bylaws, the Vampires. We had Reform from Limerick. We had the top rock bands at Newbridge Town Hall running for about 3 years every weekend.
Amazing.
And I had guest DJs. Pat Egan used to come down occasionally and do guest DJ. We had Smiley Bulger, and his brother as well used to come down as well from Dublin. So it was a little bit of a rock centre in Newbridge, in the town hall particularly. You know, some of the memorabilia from that era went into a book, was written by a guy in Sweden, and he has a copy of the letter from Phil Lynott included in it as well. I have a copy of Thin Lizzy's first single as well, which is called The Farmer.
Yeah.
Which is in very collectible item.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That was my kind of music then.
I
got into country music about 12-13 years ago.
Right.
I was
offered
the job with KFM.
Okay. So
up to that it was rock. Give me, you know, 10 years after, and Led Zeppelin and AC/DC, and you know, that was my kind of music, and still is too.
And obviously, none of that would have got played on the national stage.
Well, it's very, very occasionally. Nothing to any great extent. I can remember being part of Radio Dublin and being out at the Phoenix Park when the road races were on, and there's a local guy called Michael Rowe who was doing very well at the time. We went out to watch him, and we had the radio car out there. But I remember coming across Pat Kenny, and he came up and shook hands and said, "You guys really rock, you're playing good music, I like what you play." But he only had a 15-minute slot on RTE at the time in his night bus programme.
Ronnie College used to come and do programmes with us in Nace with Radio Kildare as well.
Amazing.
It was... It was there. It's just that the people who were in charge in the national broadcaster were just slow to get that wake up call.
Yeah. definitely. So, in terms of commercialness, you made all your money from local advertisements, or was it completely voluntary and very little?
Well, it was all voluntary.
Yeah.
Except in the KLB days, we had two permanent employees. We had a receptionist.
Yeah.
We got under a FOSS scheme, so we were kind of paying half the wage, and they were, the government were paying the other half. And we had a rep on the road who was working on commission, so nobody else was getting paid. It was just the money was raised to pay the rent, keep the lights switched on, and it was all, everyone else was voluntary.
Fantastic. So, well, that's the true ethic.
Yeah, well, that was,
Brilliant. So, yeah, what was your listenership? How much, do you have a vague idea of what the popularity of the
well, you just know that you have to remember this was before mobile phones. You just have a landline, and it was constantly ringing. So you take a request, I suppose, for people, just a submission that would take about a minute on the phone, but that'd be down. If you take 60 minutes in an hour and you're getting maybe 40 or 50 calls in a minute.
That's and a hell of a lot of listenership.
So it's and then that's somebody ringing in for somebody else who's obviously listening as well. So you just double that.
Yeah.
So I'd say 5,000 to 6,000 easily.
Yeah. Brilliant. But the success, the number of listeners can only be gauged by the response from the business community who wanted to get on board and wanted to advertise, and how frantically they, you know, we could only put so much advertising on air.
Yeah. Before
there were no regulations at that time saying you can only have so many minutes per hour.
Yeah.
But common sense had to come into play. And
of course.
You know, But I mean, several thousand listeners.
Wow.
You know.
Amazing. So when Kildare, when did it start to dissolve? And
well, about 1982, 83.
Okay.
We kind of finished. We did our last broadcast in 1983 under that name.
Yeah.
But I joined Liam for some time in KLB on an occasional basis.
Yeah.
And
but there were one or two other stations then that popped up around the place, wasn't
after
there?
After us, yeah. But we were, as I said,
it was Kildare Local Broadcasting, and then there was one at the Harbour, wasn't there?
Yeah.
KCR.
KCLR, is it? Or
KCR.
KCR?
Yeah.
And when did KLB?
KLB started, as far as I remember, 83.
Okay, so
83, 84 to the end of 87.
Okay.
When the licensing was coming in.
Brilliant.
So
we
had 3 or 4 years, you know, which
was
a long time for a local station.
Yeah. You know. And did you end right at the end on New Year's?
Well, we did. We went off air and actually made the announcements and said that, you know, we are going off air because we're going to be involved in applying for a license.
And can
some stations decide to stay on and defy the date, you know, but they were told it's time to cut now. So to keep ourselves in favour with the Department of
Communications. The thing is, if you kept going on, you would ruin any chance you had of getting a license.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thinking anyway.
Yeah. Well, we didn't regard ourselves as pirates. We regard ourselves as unlicensed.
Yeah.
There was no licensed facility there, so it wasn't that we were flouting the law.
Of course, we were
campaigning for a law to be put into place.
Exactly.